Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, this is Meg. Couple things, just from feedback that we received both during the meeting and then written things that have come our way. We were asked for clarification on what's going on Fridays. I believe you covered that pretty clearly. I'm just is bookkeeping the term right now? I've had some questions about what about kids on IEPs. I do feel like you cover that as well, for what's going on with them and what the Friday plan is. Couple quick questions. One, can you clarify for elementary students if we're in the yellow zone, so like our first month of school, when they're going every other day? Or no, we're not doing that. It's morning and afternoon.
That was that was what I had the most feedback on, is the disruption in the schedule from August 31st to September 8th, and just that week where you have those students going. I had my purpose was the slow start and trying to get smaller groups, but realistically, we have smaller groups coming into our schools to be with our teachers. So I think that that is something that we can look at and make that adjustment on. I would just really like to run it past the teachers on Tuesday.
Okay. So when an elementary age kiddo is not in their 3-hour in-person block, this is a distinction from secondary. And I've had feedback like this as well, where maybe parents are confusing these two concepts. We're not asking for elementary kids to log in, like let's take a fourth or a fifth grader in particular. We're not asking them to log in. If their class starts at noon, they're not on at 8 a.m. online. That's not a thing for elementary, right?
Could be.
So,
as the plan is written in the yellow zone,
the education commissioner, Michael Johnson, I have written to him because this was his thoughts, was when we were in the AM session and a student was going to school from 8 to 11, he wanted to know what those teachers were doing for those students outside of the AM session. And so that was kind of my proposal, was the virtual. I wrote him again, letting him know that, you know, these yellows, these medium risk plans, I don't know how long they're going to last. They might be a week. They might be a few months. We know that right now we're going to reassess and reevaluate on September 25th. But realistically, we're going to do it every week, every day. We're going to be reevaluating and looking at our plans and hopefully not moving and sliding. Hopefully we can stay in that low risk once we move into it. And just how frequently do we move between, and is it even worth it to, you know, we have people who are expressing, how are we going to do this? How are we going to teach virtual when we're at work, and who's going to be responsible is it going to be the grandparents that are taking care of them at home? Is it going to be the child care centers? Who is that going to be? And so he's a great man to talk with. And I do believe that he's going to have some sort of answer for us. And if we are only looking at yellows for small amounts of time, I'm sure that he's going to be okay with this. I couldn't see. I don't know, Erica, Rick, how you guys feel about that relationship. But I do think Wrangell right now is in just a little bit of a different boat. They're green and they're yellow. They're low and they're medium are the same plan, the AM, PM at this time. And so they are really having to try to figure out what to do outside those AM sessions and PM sessions for their students.
And I guess I would just jump in real quick and say that, you know, I think that, I think that virtual or digital options should be an option, but but I don't know that they can need to be the only option. And I think especially for elementary, that's where we have to spend that time with the teachers to really talk about that, maybe more of a menu, and kind of think about what that really looks like for, you know, a first grader or, you know, a fifth grader. Some people may really prefer something like that, that's more of a digital option, and some don't, you know. And so trying to be more, I think, again, a little bit more flexible maybe with our elementary and our younger kids. So coming up with a menu, I think, like that is going to be important for families. Yeah.
This is Katie. Having options like that, I know a lot of families' concerns were on mental health and emotional health too, and I just did a training on it as well that I had signed up for a few weeks ago. Great training, by the way. But one of the biggest takeaways I got from it was that the best way for kids to cope with this like collective shared trauma was to offer a variety of learning options and how that will help them navigate, because this is grief for them. Like, this is a traumatic experience. This is something that hopefully they will never have to live through again. But having those varied learning options and a little bit of flexibility in that while still maintaining those reasonable expectations is going to be huge for our kids' mental health. So those families that were asking what we're doing to address it, we're addressing it by giving options. And I think it's important to look at it that way rather than how it's inconveniencing work schedules, which I know is hard, which can take us into our next big concern too, since we're talking about elementary age and the childcare concerns. I want to apologize on Thursday if we seemed to be rather blunt about the fact that it is not the school district's responsibility. I know that our comments on that weren't taken or well received, and maybe they shouldn't have been. I do want to reiterate, though, that, yeah, it's not the school district's thing to fix, but Heather has thrown herself into the mix and is working with child care centers. We are trying to find funding for any family that needs help. So we are addressing that concern as well. Even though it is not the school district's responsibility, the principal and a school board representative, we are advocating for your kids in that way, and we're advocating for your families.
And I guess just to add on that, in that advocating, the Community Foundation is part of that, as well as Petersburg Mental Health and the SHARE Coalition at this time.
Thank you, Heather. Does anybody have any additional questions or comments?
I guess
I have a problem with the virtual learning. I just have a, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that they just, how do we expect their kid to be virtual and they're not there? I mean, how do we expect, I mean, and they can't, I guess I should have thought about what I was going to say better. I just still not happy with this. So
is the concern more for K through fifth grade than secondary?
Yes. K through fifth grade, K through third. That's my concern. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to miss a lot. And I think that instead of, September 25th, 29th or whatever it was, I think we need to look at it every 2 weeks to see if we can move through yellow back to yellow. I'm just not, I'm not there yet. So I apologize.
If I understood it correctly though, Heather, you took out the virtual requirement, correct?
I'm getting permission from the commissioner, from Michael Johnson, with those exact concerns as Cheryl has suggested.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was understanding too.
Okay. I must have missed that part.
No, I know. On Thursday, I think we still had our virtual component. Yeah. This is a change from Thursday to today. So your concern, I think, was
an appropriate one, because I think we were all kind of on that same page of like, how do we get a third grader or fifth grade? Some fifth graders might be able to do it, but my third grader wouldn't be able to get on herself without me there.
Keeping those options, like we said, you know, some people may want those kinds of options. Some people may prefer it. Families.
But it's not a requirement.
Yeah. And some people may prefer something different. And so I think that's the creative challenge, I think, for our elementary crew.
And just to note that I know that we say virtual, but my definition of virtual is that we're distanced and not necessarily on the computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that include like paper packets or something along those lines?
Yeah. Something like a parent-child activity or all that.
Yeah.
Meg, did you have a question or comment?
I was right on that same thread, just reiterating that that right now you're not necessarily proposing the virtual, that you're getting permission for that. I think that touches on a lot of the feedback that we've received from parents that if I can get childcare, I can't also ask my childcare provider to be a teacher. So I think the work that you've done to hear parents and try to make as many compromises as possible is so difficult. And I've had a list going here and you kind of touched on all of them. So thank you.
Thank you guys.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns or comments? Okay. Hearing none. Motion has been made and seconded on 12.2 elementary scheduled draft. Approve the elementary schedule draft. Changes to be made to the schedule should follow the AK Smart Start guidance. Mara, please call the roll.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Meg Lidster?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
No.
Motion passes 4-1. Next, we'll move on to 12.3, secondary schedule draft. I'll make a motion to approve the secondary schedule draft with changes made to the schedule that should follow the Alaska Smart Start guidance. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Cheryl's made the second. Open for discussion. Or maybe we'll get an update from Principal Dormer for middle school, high school. Is that where we probably want to start? I know that I feel like we didn't get a good, thorough discussion last Thursday, so hopefully we'll be able to have that this evening. But I think we can take it away, Mr. Garmer.
Absolutely. Thank you, members of the board and community and folks listening in. I want to talk through the schedule to start off. Mrs. KP, do you have the schedule draft? You can go to the numbers. I don't know if you have the fancy picture. The numbers are good there, though. That's a good place to start.
Here, is this okay?
Yeah, that works fine. Yeah, that's great. Let me click on my notes here to get through. I'm going to kind of talk through the high school schedule proposal. It has the biggest change. The middle school is somewhat traditional, but the proposal for the high school schedule, again, is to have two block periods and two standard periods of 50 and 60 minutes. So you could see a student would start the day in a 50-minute block, which is very traditional for the high school. Would enter a read block there, which includes a grab-and-go breakfast time, as well as the first mask break kind of the day as they get going. And then at the completion of that at 9:30, you see they jump into a second period block, which is also very traditional for the high school to go right into from read period into that second period block. And then the third period there now is, and this was a change since the last board meeting, is now a 60-minute block. Students will go to lunch. This shortens that break between the breakfast and the lunch, as well as a mask break there. Lunch continues to be open campus at the secondary school. I'm sorry, at the high school, not the middle school. They come back from lunch and then they enter the fourth period, which is also a block period there. So you can see we have two shorter classes than two of the block classes a day. And again, the big difference here is that our traditional schedules, you would alternate blocks every other day. And in this model, whether we're green, yellow, or red, the block classes meet every day. And then by doubling the time there, obviously the two block classes that you'd have in semester one and two block in the other, or it could be up to four if they're a 9-week class, will finish in half the time. So 9 weeks of the semester time. So That is a rough outline of the high school schedule. It allows for 6 credits as opposed to 7. 6 credit keeps them on track for the graduation requirements of 24 by the high school. We've actually begun. One of the concerns I know by board members was that the schedule wouldn't work going from these 4 classes at a time and then having 2 additional classes in the second semester. Ms. Turner and I have worked on just throwing some ideas out there on looking at student requests, and actually the schedule's coming together very nicely. To be honest, it's been easier than years past, and part of that has to do with our work right now to not have students, teachers change as much between buildings. So we have a little more flexibility in some of our teacher schedules, where typically they tend to be a little more rigid. So I know there are a lot of benefits of the 4-period day that we've talked about. I've got some information from the superintendent from Kodiak. There's another, an exemplary school district that's going to the 4-period block. Sitka, as we talked about, Edgecombe has run off this for a long time. As I heard recently, has gone to a trimester, and then all of the Fairbanks High School. So we've been looking for some information. I know there are a lot of benefits in there. And the main ones, again, all of these are just what it does for us is it minimizes staff, student contacts and groups. The high school, again, is not possible to pod. Students have different paths or to get ready for career, college, the military, the workforce, whatever they'd be headed for. So it's not possible to pod in the high school. So what you want to do is create these longer periods of time. You get more instruction during 85 with one teacher in one group until you reduce the contact groups. And then obviously by staying in that group for the full 9 weeks or semester, then you're not switching all over the place and exposing to another 50% of the student body there. So it does also help with a little of the transition time. You reduce the transition times in the hallway just to 4, where last year on a Monday, we would have 6 transition times with 7 periods a day. So obviously we've made some improvements in that area. There is some talk about the stress level, which we really like. We had been talking about potential of a 6-period day because we feel our students are in the high school tend to get a little overstressed, balancing 7 periods, 7 classes going on. This drops that down to 4 at a time, which is a really nice break, especially considering just the social emotional concerns we all have about our young people coming back into school. So it does maintain that 6 credits a year, as we talked about. It allows students to take, again, a full core credit load in a semester, which is a benefit for some students. One of the big concerns at the talk, I believe the board said as well, was advanced placement courses, which have a very stringent curricula they have to get through. And then the preparation for the AP tests, which are traditionally in April, May. And Ms. Turner and I, as we've looked, have been able to schedule our AP classes on non-block schedules right now. That seems to work for most students. It's not 100%, but it works for most students without some major conflicts, so that's nice. Again, as I mentioned, I've reached out to some principals and continue to look for some of the solutions. I know that one of the things that the other places we're talking about, and almost everyone that I know of has gone to all block. I haven't talked to any schools that have done what we've done, which is a partial 2 and 2, where 2 block and are 2 shorter. But I know one of the problems is some of those classes like AP and band you want to happen all year, and we've been able to solve that by going to 2 and 2 instead of a straight block all the way across. That gap in content exposure, of course, and the learning that can happen there, especially with math. You keep hearing math. You heard Mr. Powick, again, who's got a great mind on his shoulders talking about math, and he's got a kid coming into the high school next year, and that is something we talk about. There are no silver bullets for that one that I've talked with. Everyone's been talking about it. Sitka was talking about an enhancement or an enrichment time in the spring, I think they were also going to use that to prepare for the AP tests. We could talk about that. And the big question there is if you take time to rehearse or study some things you've learned earlier, what happens to the classes that are going on now? You know, is it better just to do that in the fall when we typically reteach? One of the ideas that Mr. Shumway had talked about is this idea of, instead of doing the both quarters in a row, that you would do a quarter, and then the second quarter you would go to your new class, and then you go back on the third quarter, and then flip-flop there with the fourth quarter. We've seen that before. You increase exposure a little bit throughout the year instead of going on a full semester, but that is one solution out there. And we'll keep looking for some of those. The one in the gap in content exposure is the big one, and what I'm getting a lot of feedback, and I know the board members have expressed as well, and we'll just keep talking about it. There's a lot of benefits, and again, the biggest one is just minimizing exposure while still providing a really nice education for our kids. So, apologize, the beagles are barking as they would as soon as I start talking. So, as you have heard before in previous drafts, the green is 5 days for students, Monday through Friday. Yellow is 2 days a week per student where they're alternating in groups. So content would continue to be delivered throughout Monday through Thursday. And then one group, we're calling them blue and white groups, half the kids would be there, 50%, on you know, Monday, and then half would be at home zooming in, and then we'd alternate back and forth there. And then Friday is a day for, it could be student projects, it could be a good day for to bring some labs in small groups, some small group instruction, of course, some special needs students will be there on Friday, extended student support, and then of course some extra time there for staff professional development. So got some great ideas for our Friday going on there. Couple things to talk about. Second page. One of the things I do want to say, and I don't believe we've said this out loud to the board, is staff have talked, and I think it's a really good idea, and this would come before the board again, talk about, but we have worked the last couple of years to end semester one before Christmas break, knowing there were some needs there and some learning gains we thought by wrapping that up and then starting. It made second semester a little longer, but we knew there were a lot of things that happened with graduation and testing and spring break and such. This would be a year where we would look to not do that, where we would extend first semester all the way till the end of January. January 22nd seems to be the split in the middle, or give us a little extra time, knowing we've got a lot to learn as a group, as a learning community, both students and staff and parents, as we're figuring out this new world we're living in, as well as just giving, we obviously, if we're going to have those classes that end at the semester in the quarter, we want to make those as equitable as possible. So that's something we'd like to talk more about as a staff and then bring it before the board. As you saw there, masking while at the school is something we need to do in the secondary school while they're at school. Obviously, you've heard some masking breaks built in. I'll talk to the middle school here in just a minute. Some masking breaks there. There was a comment, I think, about enforcement, and I continue to say this is a tough time for kids and families and staff and administrators, everybody. And so, again, we're not swinging the hammer when it comes to masks, but at the same time, it needs to be enforced across the board. You know, staff and students, we all need to merit. Obviously, if someone gets uncomfortable, they take it off, and they, you know, we have a discussion and they take a break. And again, we're all working with children here, and most of us have done it for a long time. So, but at the end of the day, if a student says, you know, my family doesn't believe in masking, I don't wear a mask, we would say, yeah, we completely respect that. And we've got some awesome online learning opportunities for you, because you can't be in the building for a long period of time on masks. So I just want to be clear that it is kind of a non-negotiable there. Don't know if he said this very clearly, but no lockers and no locker rooms. So that'll be kind of an adjustment, but that makes sense. We're hearing a lot of schools do that. And kids are going to be fine. To be honest, a lot of our high school kids don't use their lockers anyway. And then when the middle schoolers do, they do a pretty good job with it, but they also put really smelly food in it. So figure it's kind of a win-win there, and we'll adjust, and it'll be fine. We'll talk a little bit about snow boots. We've already started talking about what to do with, you know, wet shoes and stuff living in Petersburg. And I think we got some solutions there. Comment I make, and this would apply to a middle school, but one of the ideas was, you know, the idea that a kid would tune in at 8:15 when they're at home in a yellow, which again, nobody loves, and it's going to have to be all the online. We're really hopeful to get into green and get all of our kids there spread out and safe and learning together. But I do ask everybody just involved to trust our certified teachers to effectively and purposely instruct during short classes and long classes to students who are there in person and to students that are there online. We don't have teachers that are going to stand there and sage on the stage for 85 minutes long and bore the tar off of our kids. They're really good. We have an excellent teaching staff. We've already started talking about some strategies to, you know, even better ways to engage students online. But we've been engaging students online for a long time, and they're really good teachers. So is it going to be difficult? Yeah, it's not perfect. We wish they were in the building. We wish they were PE playing basketball too and running around and stuff. But again, we're doing the best that we can, and our teachers are already been getting ideas and texts and emails and some cool ways to make things fun for kids and to connect and journal in and discussion groups online with kids there. You know, there's a lot of cool ideas. So please trust our staff that we will, it will not be a straight marathon of turning on 8:15 and finally powering it off at 2:15, along with mask breaks, there'll be breaks for kids online, that kind of stuff. So we do know what we're doing, and we're doing our best to prepare for this difficult world of kids at home and being in there. So in fact, we've already planned some professional development activities around this for our teachers to continue to grow in some of the skills we already have. So I also want to bring out there, just for overall information, this idea of distance delivery. We have worked for a lot of years. We've had many, many students in the middle and high school that have participated in an at-home learning environment, whether it's through their family, whether it's through IDEA, Raven, some of those programs. And then they've come in for some of our classes, whether that's math or language arts. You know, our SHOP program is so exemplary in what Mr. Owens does there with our kids. And we've had a lot of kids come and be part of that, our activities, our amazing band and choir. So we've been doing this type of hybrid thing for quite a while. And we really just want to keep encouraging people to do that. We are going to be even more flexible this year especially in the secondary, sorry, in the high school with students and at-home learning ideas and business co-op. I think I mentioned Ms. Turner's made a couple more connections where students can get credit and learn some work skills in the workplace, possibly even earn a decent wage while doing all that. And that gets them out of the building and it gets them involved in things that that they'll be doing for a living. So there's a lot of cool ideas and they're even growing as we go. So we'll be getting information out to parents there. We have Mrs. Cotta designated as the distance delivery coordinator for the district. We've already scheduled in some teachers that will have time in their day to assist students within each building. And I know Mrs. Kahn does as well, just to make connections and have a good at-home learning environment. We know that some parents are going to want to keep their kids at home. That is absolutely great. We will educate them. We've got great teachers. And I hope that people will keep thinking about the secondary ideas that we have there and the relationships already built with our teachers and give us all the cool at-home learning environments. A lot of stuff there. And then finally, I want to say just some questions about, you know, we've talked soft start and stuff. We're planning on starting on August 31st, as Ms. Kahn has said. We've talked about some orientation days, possibly the few days prior and the end of that week prior. So details are coming out. We want to work with teachers on that. So we're still waiting to get our great teachers back on contract and talk about that. But there'll be some orientation days, just a few hours to come in and kind of be like, this is what it looks like, and work on that. Registration details will be coming out at the end of this week. Scheduling, like I said, we've started the scheduling, and once we get that, we'll get information to our high school kids, especially, so they're looking at it. And then, as everyone said, but it keeps coming up, just a reminder that reevaluate date on September 25 for all three buildings, and we hope to move to green at that time. So Mrs. KP did an excellent job explaining the guide or the metric. I love it because I'm a math science guy, and I love the data behind it, this guiding document. I was in the meeting today with EOC, and it's good stuff. And so there will be explained to parents so you can see what constitutes a green, a yellow, and a red. It's a good guiding, like I said, it's a matrix there, and it's pretty good stuff. So you'll see more of that information coming. Thanks, everyone, for the patience. Obviously, none of us like making a schedule in almost mid-August. I don't know if in my career I've ever had a schedule as late as mid-August, but at the same time, none of us have really lived in anything like this before. So that is an update on the high school as well as some big overview. I'll take a breath and let people ask questions. Thank you for your time and attention.
I have a question. This is Katie. Just to clarify the path that's like zooming into class. So the teacher will be providing like in-time content and activities to them as well. It's not like prepared, like, okay, these are activity, you can log in for attendance, and then here's your list of activities or videos or whatever you have to do, go do it on your own. It's more interactive than that.
Yeah, yes it is. They'll be participating with the class. We've done this some with traveling teams, especially when our ferries got bad the last couple years, where kids would just zoom in, or it's technically Ring Central using the Zoom platform as we're on right now, but they'll zoom in the class and be a participatory member. They'll take attendance with them there, which we've done. Mr. Troutman is one of the pioneers of this, a great science teacher. But you take attendance because, yep, I see, Lucas Stormer's face there on the computer screen, and he's going to participate along with the class. It'll be synchronous learning, with our teachers and with their classmates and stuff. That way they're not losing as they're going back and forth. And it prepares us for, heaven forbid, we get in a red. Or if kids get sick, it allows them to kind of keep along and keep along with the class. So it isn't, hey, check in with you. There's a bunch of worksheets. I'm going to send you an email now. Go have a good time. Although, again, I believe there will be opportunities when the class starts working, the kids can, can log off at the end and work at their own time, recognizing they're at home, Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So I do have a couple questions, Rick. This is Sarah. So are classes that are on the regular, or called regular, not block, those are semester-long classes?
No, I'm sorry, and I apologize if I misspoke. Those will be year-long classes. They'll just like they were in years past.
Okay. And then block classes will be semester only, but year-long content?
Yes, and let me be clear. We do have some classes in the past. For example, our seniors are required to take in years past, it was a semester of Alaska history and a semester of American government. Remember Amanda took that a couple of years ago? It was just a couple of years ago, right? And so that goes, so those classes will be done in 9 weeks. So everything goes in half. So I apologize for the confusion of a semester versus a full year class versus a 9 week. So again, everything's cut in half. because in a block, because you're doubling the time that you're with the students.
Okay, so I guess, and then you said, I just want to make sure I understood you, like AP classes are year long as well?
First and third period, those 50 and 60 minute respectively classes are will last year long. So again, someone could technically take band for a semester and take another class, but those are year long classes. They would take like band third period for the full year and receive one full credit, or receive 0.5 credit for finishing at the semester. Does that help a little bit?
Well, I guess, if someone were to be in AP biology, they would take it the entire from September to May?
Yep. AP biology, AP calculus, and AP literature, the three AP classes we offer this year.
Okay.
We'll be offering.
Okay. I just want to clarify. So the only difference between yellow schedule and green schedule would be kids alternating coming into the building versus coming in every day.
Yeah, everybody would be in every day, and we'd have school on Friday. It's a shorter day, even shorter than it was before, but yeah, we'll have in-person school on Friday for half day.
Okay, so once we set this schedule for the year with block and regular, we're locked into it for the school calendar year.
Yes, you wouldn't be able to change the block and the non-block schedule in midstream, because you'd be in mid-instruction covering content at different rates.
Okay. Have you guys, I don't know how far along you are in the scheduling process, and so maybe you have to wait even to talk to teachers, but has there been a determination of what classes are going to be in block and what are going to be regular, I guess, for lack of a better year-long versus semester or 9 week or?
Yeah, we started with the ones we were worried about. Obviously the AP ones we started with, band, foreign languages, 2 out of 3. We're offering 2 sections of Spanish 1 and 1 section of Spanish 2 based on forecasting numbers. And so 2 out of 3, just because we only had 2 choices. So one of the Spanish 2 is falling in a block. But what's nice about that is when it wraps up early, most kids don't take Spanish 3. So you don't have as much of that continuing education that you do have in math. Obviously, we have math all the periods throughout the day, so some of them naturally fall into a block and naturally fall into a standard class.
Okay, so we could have some kids finishing a particular math class in January 21st, and not potentially have math until September again.
Yep. And we don't have it set up in the schedule. I'm sure someone's going to ask, because we've got some great parents who push their kids that, you know, if you finished Algebra 1, at least I guess I shouldn't say this completely, I don't think we have it set up where you could take Algebra 1 and then jump into geometry for the second. Yeah. I don't think there's enough given kids schedules to do that, but we're not aiming. That's not a goal there. We're planning still for kids to get, you know, 1 credit a math a year for those who need it.
So really, most kids should be taking math in the second half of the year then. So their gap will only be, in theory, 3 months instead of 9,
which is the same as a summer break anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. I thought that kids could have the potential to, you know, if they're taking Algebra 1 and, yeah, it's shortened into a, you know, from September to January, that they could go February to May with Algebra 2 or Geometry or whatever's the next step. They'd have to wait for the entire next year.
Probably, yeah. We haven't designed it for it to work like that. I guess it could. Most kids won't have the kind of room. They'd probably have to be a junior or senior to have that kind of room in their schedule to be able to fit multiple math courses, you know, with all the other requirements. Because then they would potentially finish early. But having said that, obviously, if people really wanted to, we have some things like VHS and stuff where they'd be able to do it on their own. If that was a strong goal of parents, like I said earlier, flexibility for kids getting their career goals accomplished is definitely a large priority this year in the schedule.
This is Megan. Just to clarify, Sarah, or I'm not sure who said it, but somebody said it would be better for them to take math, for example, starting in January because it would be a shorter gap, but it's really not, because if you think about, they finish at the end of May, so it'll be, you know, we'll have June, July, August September, October, November, December. So the gap is the same either way. So either way, it'll be an issue. But
Well, I think what my comment was is I was assuming, and I made an assumption that, let's say a freshman takes Algebra 1 from mm-hmm. September to January 21st, and then they can take Geometry from January to May. Mm-hmm. I thought that's what the block schedule would permit. So I was thinking, oh, okay, so yeah, they move through math a little bit faster, but I was wrong. So sorry, go ahead, Meg.
No, that's okay. On the topic of if a student has that big break, that's my biggest hang up right there across the board. I guess I'm curious to hear more, doesn't necessarily have to be right at this moment, but developing over the next few months a plan of how to support kids in that, because I am really, really concerned that that's going to be just much more than the normal reteach that has to happen, you know, let's say in August, September after a normal summer break. So I think we need to be mindful and purposeful in how to move forward with that process, because I do think it's going to have a pretty big impact.
Is there a way where, like, because I understand math is like the big thing, because I couldn't imagine not doing math for that long and then having to come back to it. There probably just is not room in the schedule to just offer math as a virtual option as normal, only virtually, which I know is not ideal for all people. But if it balances out and keeps the structure the same of how it's taught, would that be like a potential avenue?
Where kids are like, this is Sarah, where kids are calling in, you know, getting on, and they're watching the lecture and can ask the questions in real time, but it's 5 days a week versus all year or 4 days a week or whatever.
Yeah, and then it would eliminate this block where you're shoving a whole year into a semester, which I know is still the same amount of like time dedicated to that course, but mm-hmm. yeah, that gap is hard. So could we keep it structured the same way throughout the whole year, whatever it happens to be, but just offer it virtually or distance or whatever you want to call it?
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, the big challenge really comes down to time and the schedule. Like Sarah mentioned, a freshman that takes Algebra 1 will absolutely be picking up another course second semester that they'll need. Maybe that's world history, maybe it's physical science. There's not, you'd be anyone who's going to double up. And we've had a lot of our exchange students, you know, because they go and they don't get credit when they're across the ocean. So they come back and have tried to double up with math. It's tricky, just because they're so busy on the classes that they need to take to continue off graduation, then add extra classes. I mean, any subject, but especially math is difficult. We have excellent math teachers in the high school, Mr. Thompson, Mr. Hayes. I see Mr. Hayes is on the call now. I know Mr. Thompson doesn't enjoy this for teaching math, and we all obviously clearly understand why. But again, it can be done. I've mentioned before that when I taught in Beaverton, we had 2,000 kids in the school, and we finished in mid-February, not late January. So a difference of almost a month. And that was what we did for all kids. There wasn't a choice. It was on the trimester schedule, similar to what the elementary runs. So, and again, I bring that up to say that we know that we don't love this here in Petersburg, but again, when you look at schools like Kodiak, Sitka, Edgecombe, and Fairbanks, we're not going crazy here. We're just picking a different option that allows us to hopefully keep, you know, kids healthier and still get the learning. You reteach, and we understand there's some challenges there with a larger gap, but it is, it's not something that people don't venture down and find ways to do. And again, there are a lot of advantages to this type of schedule. But again, here in Petersburg, it's not our preferred, but it is something that helps keep our staff and students safer. So
with this current schedule, you could do your algebra like coming up this fall and end January 21st with it, but you could opt then to do VHS and continue it through May, like whatever the next geometry, whatever it is. from January, end of January through May, so that you're essentially eliminating that weird gap, right? Okay.
Yeah, no, that, I guess that is a potential. Again, it's not necessarily designed to do that because something has to give, whether it's an elective or something else, but it technically could be done. And it is very possible. I could pull up the schedule, but it's still in a very big minor draft form. But it's very possible those coordinations even exist, you know, to have an Algebra 1 first semester and Geometry second semester. Right now, it's been scheduled just to minimize student schedule conflicts based on their forecasting data. So, you know, where they landed was based on just creating the schedule for students outside of the class we've already mentioned, such as band and AP classes, stuff like that.
If I could piggyback on what Katie is saying, this is Megan. The options for virtual, we're sticking on the topic of math, but for virtual math, so for if there are families listening right now, they're saying, we are afraid this plan is a deal breaker for us, for our student, for math. For people listening, do they have an option? Is the virtual program set up so they could say, we're going to choose to enroll our son or daughter in Algebra 2 or math or Algebra 1 through the virtual academy or any other of our distance options? And so they just won't ever, obviously, they're then opting to not go in person at all for math. But is that an option so that they can decide as soon as they get that schedule here in the next few weeks, we need to go this route or that route?
Yeah. I haven't researched this particular subject, but I know that, let's say a student has Algebra 1 first semester and it wraps up, it's on a block schedule, dang it, and they're going to be done in January. I know that we have geometry at that point. Geometry offered through virtual high school, which is a service we've used for quite a while, is taught by a teacher and directed by one of our teachers. The Alaska Ditch Academy, I believe, has geometry. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'd be very surprised. And I know that we also have an Odysseyware program, which is supervised and run by our teachers, that does offer all of the, I don't want to say that for calculus, it offers all of the math classes that we offer. I'm not sure it offers calculus. So there are three distance learning opportunities through our school district where students could double up on their math if that was something a family wanted to. Thanks for asking, Megan. I see where you're going with that and clarifying, and that's really important. Thank you.
Yeah, and I actually don't mean doubling up. I mean opting to not come in, not do mm-hmm. whatever math you guys are proposing at all through mm-hmm. the green plan. I guess if we can break it down like that, like we're giving up that opportunity to come to any math class in person because we're deciding that this virtual option for this specific class is a better fit for mm-hmm. our student. So that could be an option through Odyssey or the Academy to just enroll their student from September all the way to May in that math class.
Yes, that is also an option. Yep. Just do okay. A single one class all year long. That is definitely an option. Yep.
And then they can move conceivably at a pace that works for that student a little bit better, I'm guessing, or?
Yeah. Okay. And again, anything that we do through these type of things, you know, you're working at home with your son or daughter, whatever, and you get stuck on something, you can absolutely contact our math teachers, you know, just because you're doing VHS and it's stopped by another teacher someplace, you know, we've got great math support with our teachers, and they absolutely support our students, even if it's a class. I mean, they've even supported kids that are not even enrolled in our school district just because it's Petersburg and that's what you do.
I have additional questions if now is an okay time.
Go ahead. I'm good with that, Mrs. Holmgren. Okay. President Holmgren, is this good time?
Yeah. Go ahead, Meg, for people okay. that are listening.
Okay. A couple just quick housekeeping. That's the word I was looking for earlier. Masks, any cloth mask okay for high school students? They can wear a buff or cloth mask or a medical mask or whatever they have.
Masks are okay. The information we have right now is that buffs are supposed to be doubled up, and the superintendent could correct me on this as we've been hearing information from the state. But yeah, we will provide masks for students, but we only have so many. So we're encouraging families also have some at home. We found out with with like our summer school, I know in the elementary, but also some of our cross country kids have been going, is that we've given them a few masks and they leave them at home, and another one, and obviously our quantities are limited, but we do have some for each student. We got some cool double layer ones that are kind of a nice cloth one. We've obviously have the cloth ones you saw that the seniors were wearing in May as they graduated with the Vikings on them and blues and whites and stuff like that, as well as just a standard medical mask. So, and we do encourage families to get masks, and masks that just cover your mouth are great. Again, buffs, just be cautious. I'm hearing you may have to double up. So if you get warm easily, you might think about that, but I know some people are really comfortable with buffs. So Mrs. KP, is there more to say about that?
Yeah, that was the most recent research that had come out too. We were hoping that we could have that be just an easy option, like buff up or whatever. We were going to have a kind of an idea about that. And they're kind of changing. They're talking about the just the way that the kind of breathing through those, because of the fabric, it actually kind of creates more smaller, I don't know, aerosol something. So this is my medical life there. That was my medical answer. But that's, they described it that way, that it actually kind of breaks it up into smaller aerosols. And so it's actually, you know, worse maybe. So talked about doubling them up.
Okay, thank you. A question about AP Computer Science. Was that on the docket for this year?
We have put computer science, we have not met with Mr. Thompson to find out if he wants to offer the AP option. The nice thing, at least last year, is that the AP option was just a long project in programming. And so it was something that could be done at their own pace. So it wasn't quite as tightly bent on in-person or, you know, online type of instruction. So we're going to offer computer science. I don't remember, I'm sorry, if it's in a block or not, but I don't know for sure if it's going to be advanced placement class or not. We have the option to designate it either way.
Sorry, can you hear me? Okay,
no,
when do you anticipate having a schedule for students and teachers?
Ms. Turner and I met again today online, and we are hoping to be able to start emailing out high school schedules early next week. We're going to get this draft schedule out to teachers, maybe even tonight, just so they can start looking through this draft and picking and digging, because they're really the experts at all the connections that have to be made for the schedule to work for as many kids as possible. And then we'd like to email that out. Well, Ms. Turner, I'll make some changes this week. As I said, we get registration information out this week, and then hopefully to email kids personally. And then if they have questions, you know, we'll talk about how to change class if they need to on a new schedule, knowing that they forecasted and looking at a different type of a schedule. And then obviously there'll be some options there to meet virtually Ms. Turner if they have some counseling or kind of career planning questions. So early next week.
Okay. You guys have talked about the purpose of this schedule being four classes rather than six because of the reduction in risk for infection. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I know I've heard some percentages in the risk reduction. Is that really significant between four and six classes?
Yeah, no, good question. I sent some data to the board and to teachers. Just trying to crunch numbers, looking at our smallest class, being conservative. Everything is an estimate at this point. You know, you don't know if a teacher would have a student in a class that they may have later in the day, which will obviously reduce the percentage of new students. But going from four to six, just the basic math, whether you look at four to six student groups or whether you look at the number of students, if you kind of remain a constant of knowing most classes will probably, if you're splitting a class in half and teaching half now and half later, is about 14 students in the high school. Increasing, going from four to six is a 50% increase statistically. Looking at the number of students percentage, it's, you know, being exposed to about 28 more kids, which turns out of 117 kids in the school is about 24% of the student body that would be, you know, cross exposed to each other, as well as teachers would have an exposure in their room to those kids. And again, that would be every 2 days you'd be going back and forth with a group on our traditional schedule. So that's the whole point of it. Again, if we weren't worried about the exposure, we'd be on a regular schedule. We might be looking at six periods for the stress factor that we were planning for last winter when we were stocking six periods. But that is absolutely the reason to talk about this block schedule, and the reason I believe some of these other schools are doing it as well, I would assume. Well, I've got a minute here. While it's quiet, I was Ms. Fry texted me and said that Odysseyware goes up to pre-calc. So just to clarify, thank you, Ms. Fry, for listening in. That's good information. And some teachers and staff threw a couple ideas about some summer, you know, remediation sessions for students that want to get some math in. I actually know some of our kids. I was talking with a parent this morning on email that has their son taking some math classes over the summer just because it's something they do as a family. But I wonder if we could talk as a district if there's a way for us to support some summer kind of catch up or some sessions. We get questions a lot, both in middle school and high school, for these parents. Often we don't get a lot of questions from kids that want to take classes over the summer. I don't know if you guys believe that, but we do get a lot from parents. And of course, what a great thing to do, especially if we're in a setting here where it's not the ideal conditions that we prefer here in Petersburg. It'd be cool if we could offer some summer school positions. So something for us to talk about, Mrs. KP, with Mrs. Quitzland.
This is Sarah. I do have a question. So if you go on to the school district website and go under virtual high school and then click on their catalog, if what they have online, are all those available to our students here, or is it only ones, you know, certain ones?
I have not looked at that probably since last January. But yes, the idea is, yes, those are options to our kids. We have only so many seats and we pay for more, but of course we can do that. We use it by 20 to 25 seats a year. There's a cost there. What the trade-off there, Mrs. Cotta teaches a class for all students to take, and then every course is taught again by a certified teacher. So it's not just a plug and chug. There is a teacher that guides you and supports you. Sometimes they're in different time zones, etc. But they are pretty typically quality classes. I'm going to say all of them are available there. You have to be careful and you want to talk with Ms. Cotta. You can email her and she'll get back to you on Tuesday when she's back on contract. But some of them tend to be like a different category where they maybe are more expensive. So there could be a cost to a family. We were also talking today. I know Mrs. Kumps, one of our great science teachers, has been talking with UAS and UAF and trying to offer kind of some of the, what those look like, that they could be through us, but they would have these college kind of science classes. I know we've had kids do that for math as well. So just kind of thinking, like I said, lots of cool options out there to connect kids, especially for virtual learning.
Okay. It's Sarah again. I'm just looking at the catalog as we're talking, and it looks like they offer everything we do, plus, you know, some other options, like statistics. But I would think potentially if a student or a family chose because they wanted the continuity of not having a gap from January to September. Mm-hmm. If they chose to take advantage of the virtual high school and it costs more than normal, maybe some of our COVID money could be used for it, because they normally wouldn't be taking this option, but because of the schedule, they're kind of forced into that for not having the gap. I can understand, this is more of a statement, the concerns of parents that have, specifically with math, because it's building on concepts. It's not just, you know, if it's a social science or U.S. history, we learn about U.S. history, and yes, we won't be able to maybe go as deep in a shorter period of time, but math is building on concepts, and if you don't have the first concept, it's pretty darn hard to progress to the next one. And I will admit, even in my own high school career eons ago, that I knew there was no way I would get through math analysis as a senior and successfully without destroying my GPA. So I chose to take Algebra 2 twice, my junior year as well as my senior year, so I didn't have a gap from the time I finished my junior year to starting as a freshman in college. So I'm quite empathetic to some of these concerns that parents are having over gaps.
Yeah.
Large gaps. Anybody else want to have any questions or comments?
This is Cheryl.
Oh, sorry.
So, Rick, is math the only class that is going to one semester? Because isn't biology also a year-long class?
Yeah, no, there will be multiple courses that will only be a half year. Math is the one that tends to build on itself more than traditional classes. You can take a biology class and take some months off and take a chemistry or physics, and you're going from a life science to a physical science. So it's not ideal, but it's not quite as, I don't know if I use the word painful, but as difficult, you know, as it is math, where, you know, you finish algebra 1, you go to geometry, you go to algebra 2, we hope you go to trig or pre-calc, and we hope to go to calc and go off and be an engineer, you know, and that's the path there. And so because they build off each other so much, then it's just traditionally more of a challenge. Most people say that math and foreign language are the two classes that are a challenge, both to have those concepts in a tighter window, even though the minutes are all there, but as well as having those gaps. You know, if you go from Spanish 1 and don't have Spanish 2 for a while, then you, you know, got a little more of a memory gap from the vocab and the sentence fluency and structure. So.
Did you say earlier that you were hoping Spanish 1 would be taught? That's the word I'm looking for. It's not yet 8:30. We're doing good. That Spanish 1 would be taught in the spring. Did you say that? Or was I making that up in my head?
No, I talked about, we were able to schedule, Ms. Turner did most of the work there and able to get, we're going to have 2 Spanish 1 sections and 1 Spanish 2 sections, if you catch that. Hard to say the 1 and 2s together. Right now, both Spanish 1s are in, I believe are both in the sections that go, that are year long, that are 50 and 60 minute. I think they're first and third, and Spanish 2 is on a block. But like I said, it's, the gap is a little bit more, a little more okay there, because like I said, we have almost nobody that takes Spanish 3, and they usually have to do it online or kind of an independent study thing. So it's as successful as possible with the Spanish.
Okay. So it's looking like Spanish would be period 1 or 3, the year long class.
Yeah. In the draft. And then, you know, it's a draft, okay. But yeah, looking like it's
going to work. The most difficult class in terms of building upon itself is math. And then of course, language arts. I mean, all of those cores are important. There's not one that's less than another. But they don't all build the same way. So,
yeah.
I also would like to point out that I did have an issue with the 2 85 minute blocks in your schedule that you had presented previously. And I am worried about, you know, what that time looks like for students that are home. Mm-hmm. I do feel like it's a reasonable compromise, or it's on the road to a good compromise that those blocks are no longer back to back. So I appreciate you listening to the feedback on that. I will, and you had said something about trusting teachers, and I said the same thing in the beginning. I do trust our teachers 100%. We're asking parents to put a lot of trust in teachers, and it's a huge burden on teachers. And I acknowledge that. I've got feedback from teachers as well. And it's a lot on them. I recognize it's just as hard probably for them to deliver all this content in 85 minutes as it is for a 14 or 15 or, you know, up to young adult brain to take in all that information. I ran into a young woman downtown and she said, "Is it true?" I said, "We'll see." You know? I guess I'm just really, we are having to put a lot of trust in them that those classes do need to be very creative, and it's asking a lot of our amazing teachers. They already do a lot. We're asking even more. So I'm just trying to acknowledge that. We do appreciate the tough position they're in.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I got to be fair too. Mr. Lenhard loves where band is. Mr. Owens is so excited to have shop in the block. You know, there's some classes that are like, thank goodness there's some block. You know, the art classes, there's some cool stuff. I told you I taught in a 90-minute block in Corvallis and as biology, and man, we had some great labs and some great lab time and some outdoor time. But again, it's a challenge for some other subjects as well. So thank you for saying that.
This is Sarah. I was sneaky and did text someone who's familiar with virtual high school and indicated that. Watch. Sorry, my watch is talking to me again. It says that. That virtual high school for Petersburg is Algebra 1, Algebra 2, AP Calculus, AP Statistics, Business Math, Geometry, and Pre-Calculus.
Cool.
They can be offered in semester classes. So if there is a concern for your student potentially that is coming in to take geometry in a short period of time, you could have the option to do virtual high school geometry for an entire year. So then maybe some students, are they adding on to that four, are they able to add on to that four block class? So let's say they are going to school for their four periods, they have four classes, but they can add virtual high school on top of that?
Absolutely. We did it last year, they had seven periods. So, and we've talked a little bit, we're researching, I'm saying this on the radio out loud, and Angela Manish is going to kick me later, but we're actually hoping to have our CNA course be at that time period. So kids could actually go, they could leave and go down to the hospital and do the work there, because that's up for this year. And that has just been an outstanding educational program for tends to traditionally be young ladies, but it's open to young men as well to go down there and learn a skill and a trade. I mean, you know, as you probably know, my daughter went through it as well, and it's been a benefit to her. So yeah, absolutely. Like that is, I think that's a fantastic idea. We already have had parents reach out and say, my kid's going to, you know, do this and do kind of some educational, some college line after school. I'm excited to have them go down and work and get some business co-op credit after school and into that time. So they absolutely could do a VHS course, an Odyssey Ware, Alaska Digital Academy, and that extra time where it used to be seventh period. Yep.
So just to clarify on that, we get our schedules in a week or two here, and you have penciled in let's say a language arts class during a block time. Family decides that's not the best situation for their kiddo, so they decide they're going to do virtual for that language arts instead. Now that block is open to them if there was room in another in an elective, for example, that they had previously hoped for.
Yes, that absolutely could happen, of course. And we do have, I think we have a lot of electives now. We have just some different nuances in the schedule this year with the connection with the elementary, et cetera. So I think we'll have, you know, some more PE options. I think we'll have, anyway, a lot of electives, hopefully, for kids to choose from as well, especially if they're doing something like that frees up a spot. I also have the list from the Alaska Digital Academy. Thank you to one of our teachers who sent it there. And yeah, it's Algebra 1, Advanced Algebra, Algebra 2, Calculus with Honors, Geometry, Pre-Algebra, Pre-Calc, Probability and Statistics. So a lot of options in that other platform as well for mathematics, as well as some other courses.
I think this is, I'm just about to my last question. So let's say I have a freshman and she takes language arts. So let's say she takes honors,
okay,
her freshman fall semester.
Mm-hmm.
So honors is kind of a problem because it doesn't, I mean, that was another one like math, I guess. It's not a bigger problem, but it's the same problem because she wouldn't pick honors up again then till the following fall. Is that how honors is going to go?
Yeah.
Is honors is going to be offered in the fall probably, or you don't know
yet? Yeah, freshman and sophomore, people who don't know the schedule, freshman and sophomore language arts students can take English 1 as a freshman and English 2 as a sophomore, or they can petition and to get into, there's an application to get into honors English as a freshman, mm-hmm, and then honors English as a sophomore. And then if they stay on that track, junior and senior, we have two different AP language arts classes. So I know you, I think you know this, Meg, but I was letting everybody else know too.
No, actually, I did not know what happens your junior year. I've been pretending that doesn't happen. So if we decide, you know, my daughter is real passionate about language arts, just as an example, and she chooses to do some sort of virtual option for the semester that will start in the end of January, what does that look like? That's not going to affect her following year. So maybe honors is a terrible example, but is it okay if you have a kiddo that's coming in now at a higher level than what you anticipated them?
Yeah.
You know, the classes can all mix. My sophomore can be in with with juniors and seniors, that's not a problem?
Yeah. I guess what would happen, and we've had students do that before where they're really, you know, that's their subject. They just love language arts. It's nice. There's so much diversity there. I mean, even within our own classes, we have fairly recently offered creative writing courses. There's a journalism. You know, you can go a couple different ways. Ms. Leonard's going to teach a speech class, which isn't necessarily so much writing, but, you know, I would consider it within the language arts thread there. So there's a lot of different ways to branch out instead of just, you know, math isn't as much that way, although you talk statistics and trig and stuff like that. But, you know, math is a little more straight and narrow, which is why I love it. And language arts and poetry and all that can go a lot of different ways. And we've had kids do that with VHS and enjoyed their time with that. So I think there's a lot of good options for language arts that way. As well as social studies, we have some social studies electives. Ms. Evans teaches a couple amazing social studies electives this year. I believe they're on the block as well. So it looks like the second semester block. So some cool ways where if you get through world history, but then you really want to take this cultural events or, excuse me, current events or some cultural studies. I mean, there's a lot of cool social studies electives out there as well, too, to kind of diversify. But it doesn't necessarily bump you ahead, if I understood how you're asking, where you would be almost kind of awkward being in a class with your peers, and that wouldn't be the case.
This is Cheryl. So in a perfect world, this schedule and this way it is, like for the semester, will hopefully only be this 1 year, right?
Yes.
So then it'll go back to normal. And so I'm having a hard time with the one semester of math just because algebra really stinks. I was being very nice. I can't do it. I'm just having a really hard time with that, but if I can kind of think, okay, hope and have faith that this is going to be the only year that we have this issue, and that I know that our wonderful teachers, if kids are in that algebra class this first semester, will, I'm sure, have a lot of, can't think of a word right now, offer those students the next year for Algebra 2 as much help as possible. I mean, I know they have to be lenient because they know they haven't had that time to have that class.
Yeah.
You know, longer. I mean, just it is. Yeah, like I said, algebra is not fun. I'm just hoping that this is our only year.
I mean,
yeah. Well, virtual. I know algebra is not an option for me.
But at least it is. You know, it's out there for families to make that choice. Or if you want to meet with, you know, Jenna, I'm sure could probably walk you through. Like, this might be a good fit for you, or Rick, I guess, for your student.
Yeah.
So at least there is the option.
This is Cheryl again. So, I mean, yeah, but some kids won't. I mean, that there is that option,
yeah.
But some kids will not be able to do that. But, hey, if some kids can, that's great. Thank you.
Yes, only this year. As far as I know, we've had teachers, anybody say, when we look at the schedule every single year with a group of really dedicated teachers trying to make it the best schedule possible. For those of you who've had kids in the high school over the years, you know that we've adjusted and tweaked and changed and try to align our schedule with the middle school, as well as try to find ways to maximize opportunities, because we have kids just doing these amazing things. And you talk about statistics, Meg. I mean, we wish we offered stats. That's a really quality class. I studied industrial engineering for a while and I took a lot of stats. Some of it was bored out of my mind, but it's, you know, we don't offer any stats. What a cool class. And so we're always looking at it, and nobody has said, boy, I really want to go to this, you know, this kind of block schedule like this for Petersburg, because it doesn't work for us. Like I said, other districts, especially ones with a lower graduation rate, there are some advantages to it, but we're fortunate we have one in the mid-90s, one of the highest in the state. And so we're very thankful to not have to worry about those type of opportunities for our kids, because they do great already.
Okay.
Does anybody have any additional questions, comments, concerns?
Megan, just that we didn't talk, or did we? And I got tired about middle school.
Nope.
Okay.
There.
I will say publicly that I've only had one parent ask about middle school, and it was more of just, what is the schedule? What does it look like? Green versus yellow versus red. But it's been radio silence for me, at least. It doesn't mean that there aren't parents contacting other board members, though.
Middle school is just such a weird time just in life anyway. So it's like, let's throw a pandemic in there. Why not? But yeah, like you, I haven't heard anything other than from staff about what the plan is.
I will be brief because I've been talking a long time. I will say, as a parent of a middle school student, and I had a teacher kind of joke about this as well, I think we're just happy to get the middle schoolers out of our house and to the school for part of the week, just so we can function differently. But again, I can say that as a middle school parent myself. He is showering more than he used to, so that's a big bonus for him. So I'm really, really happy with that for middle school boys. The middle school schedule, it actually, at face value, is very traditional. They start with that first period that will be exploratory, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and then they jump into their core subjects after that at 9 o'clock. There's that reblock again with a breakfast and a mask break for them. And I apologize for the wording where I've called it a core block in one of my schedules. It should just be known as core classes. And it's the same type of thing where they rotate among the cores, their science, their social studies, their math, and their language arts in those sections there. And the reason we originally put it down as a block is because we do some things where we have three levels with some different teachers, and we just do our best to incorporate all different levels and put them in the learning groups that most specifically match where they're at in the content. And because, you know, middle school is a lot of getting content and structure and getting them ready for those early years of high school. So it really is going to look very, very similar as far as the instruction. The lunch is at the same time. That second core instructional class time goes to 1:15 as it used to. And then that sixth period, which is going to be exploratories and electives in the middle school, as it has always been, it's looking like it'll still be PE for sixth graders and ending at 2:15. So the big change is that there is no seventh period also in the middle school, which makes it a little challenging because we have some courses that we really believe highly in. We talk about X-Tech and digital literacy. It makes it a little more complicated to get middle school band for sixth grade and seventh grade in there. Our number is going to be challenging in PE, trying to work it out. But we're on to something good, so we're moving along. One of the great benefits is that we will have two sixth grade teachers in those rooms. So those kids will stay in those groups. And the middle school looks like we'll be able to pod throughout the day, which is really important. There'll be two sixth grade groups, and that equals about 14 with pullout. Two seventh grade groups, which is about 14 kids in a room with some pullouts for kids who have some different learning needs. And then the eighth grade is a large class. They're back to 44 again. But that'll be three groups, and we've got some ideas on what that looks like in three different rooms. We're hoping to have them in their rooms, and the teachers would rotate. So sixth grade, they're just going back and forth in the hallway. Upstairs, we've got those four content area teachers plus one aide or teacher watching that third group that would rotate through. So they can pod pretty well. The big challenge we haven't figured out is, one is the PE rotation. An easy answer is just to say you take PE for this 9 weeks, you don't have it later, but we don't believe in that. We really want kids to be active. We know we can't do them all because of the shortened schedule every day, but we want to keep it in there. So we're working on the rotation there, that as well as band. 7th, 8th grade band is an elective. It's the only kind of real elective in the middle school. And so if kids are in a pod, in different pods, but they want to be in band, we haven't figured that out yet. Some ideas of rotations and just piecemealing it along the way, just maybe they're in small groups to maintain the pods. But those are one of the challenges of the middle school schedule. But it looks very traditional in the same way, except that we have them in pods. They'll go through the day very similarly. We'll have them in pods when they eat lunch. They will go outside for recess, still in those pods, and then they'll eat inside, spread out, of course. They do have to wear masks in the middle school. Same thing with some mask breaks spread throughout the day to get through that. Yeah, that is the nutshell. I'm sorry, I need to say green is 5 days, just like in high school. Yellow is 2 days a week with kids alternating. I have more concerns about our middle school kids having to Zoom in online when they're at home during those days. But again, we've got some great teachers, and we're going to set that up the best that we can. Something I haven't said too, I want to say aloud, that is our red schedule. We haven't set it up yet. We do not plan to have an 85 minute block in the red schedule. There's a lot of creative ways to do that. We still, obviously you need to have a little more time, but in the spring we were a shorter amount of times. We talked on the work session on Thursday, but the plan is, if we, heaven forbid, we do have to go to red, we would not have this long 85 minutes of kids all being there, because we don't have to. There's different ways to set it up, and we would. So I wanted to say that out loud. And then again, a reminder that I'm going to say K through eight, but I know 6 through 8 that they have Chromebooks at home, and then Macs that stay at the school. So kids will be set up. They won't have to carry them back and forth. So that's a nice thing that the Mac Tech department has put together for our families to support them.
This is Cheryl. I have a quick reconfirming. I think we've talked about it before. I just want to reiterate it again and get a confirmation from you. If middle schoolers miss, or even high schoolers miss their online classes, they are recorded, correct? And they can go back and view them.
They will record the instruction for the day. It will not, if they miss it, there's obviously the recording to catch up, but that is not intended to be an educational pathway. So if a kid says, oh, I'm just not gonna make it, I'm just about done with this level on Fortnite, I'm gonna get to it, that's not intended to be the way. It would be the same as like, shoot, I got sick, I couldn't make it to class, so I'm gonna do catch-up work that way, where they want to contact with the teacher. Does that make sense, Cheryl? They're not teaching it so much for it to be done asynchronously. It's intended to kind of happen with their class. But of course, if something happens, it's catch-up, just like if they didn't make it to school for a day, you know, for various reasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying then, Rick, that they may need, like, if somebody were sick, like actually sick, or, you know, so, like, just like you would call in and excuse your child for something like that, you would want to have that kind of communication. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, we are with the teacher and with the office. And we will take attendance, of course, and kids online count just like kids in person for attendance. And that's something we've done for years when kids are traveling, zooming in. But yeah, if they miss it, we want them to obviously let the office know and then contact the teacher. I missed it. And they probably say, well, we recorded this part of the lecture and here's the assignment, and let me talk you through some of the things that get you caught up.
And that's for, this is Sarah, and that's for the yellow schedule, not the green schedule, because green schedule means everybody's at the school, right? For middle school.
Although I do believe we will have some families that say, you know, I'm just not comfortable with in-person education for my child, and that's okay. So there's still, I believe we'll have kids that will still want to Zoom in even in a green. And we do want to support that for those families.
Okay.
Two questions.
Yep.
One, do we have, I know in the past we had some teachers who flip-flopped between high school and middle school. Is that being minimized this year for infection spread?
Yeah. Absolutely. Right now, we're down to two, I believe. Yeah. One is that AP Lit, is Mr. Ward's going to come up for one period, and then Spanish for Mr. Petruski while he does middle school social studies. But I think we're down to just those two in the schedule. So we've worked really hard to minimize that as much as possible, because that was, and that's one of the main reasons we want to get that sixth grade teacher, to keep those teachers from having to run up and down the hallway. It just spreads our contagion group. We will still have, you know, like a Mr. Brock and PE, so I need to be fair, Mr. Lenhart and band, you know, we just don't have other people that teach those classes, but we are minimizing as much as possible.
Okay. I get torn between like, the kids can't do this, but then there's a teacher that goes back and forth, and if that one of those classes is the class that gets hit, then it makes no difference anyway. I totally get the rationale. It's just a,
yeah,
you know, there's lots of another question is, you know, you had mentioned that if we do move into red zone, we are obviously all classes have to be online. We're now locked into these schedules, which you know, even with middle school, you know, this is the schedule, but particularly with those block classes in high school, you know, the teacher still has the burden of getting the kids through that content, particularly high school, because, and I know I thought I was done with high school, but, you know, you know, for people who are listening and they're thinking, you know, I think about my 8-year-old, she has years to catch up. My 15-year-old, you know, I'm working on like the task list so he can leave my home. We're down to the nitty gritty here. And I know teachers are going to, they're also feeling that burden. So we're saying if we move into red, we want to try to be flexible with teachers and students and not hold them to, you know, being logged in for 85 minutes. But at the same time, we do have to get through that content. So that, yeah. that's a pretty, it's a tall order.
Yeah, no, I hear what you mean. You're exactly right. They're short on time. I've got a child leaving my house in 3 days. So, and she, you know, went through a spring and COVID. Luckily, it was just the second half of her year. But we've thought about that. We haven't talked deeply about that with teachers. But what it means to have from this block class, and then we have to go to red for a long time. That's quite a challenge to get through that material. Obviously, I would say that if we reevaluate and we're red for a long time, I bet we really reevaluate what that looks like. But for short time, I mean, just off the top of my head was the idea of probably meeting with them to get some work and possibly checking in again. I know that we're going to use Fridays more if we go to more red. And again, I do want to be clear that some students, some of our higher needs and special needs, I believe will still do some in-person education or red, but it'll be very, very minimal.
I hope if we... if we get in that situation, regardless of if we get into red, it looks like we're stuck in red. We're going to be there a while. I suppose we will need to be meeting anyway, but this will be sort of an important topic to maybe hash out again.
I agree.
If that happens, so that we can support teachers, so they can support kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. We didn't get through the content we wanted to in the spring, and we knew that, and it was new. We learned a lot, but we also know if we're in red, you just can't cover the same amount of content as you can before, and we'll do the best we can, just like we did in the spring, and it was pretty darn good with the crew we had, so it'll be even better this time. But hopefully we stay out of red, so. I thought I had a question earlier. I don't hear you now. I apologize.
No. Okay, so any additional questions, comments, concerns? Okay, I'm going to call for the question then. Ooh. Motion's been made and seconded for 12.3 secondary schedule draft. Approve the secondary schedule draft. Changes made to the schedule should follow the Alaska Smart Start guidance. Mara, please call the roll.
Sarah Holmgren.
Yes.
Katie Holmland.
Yes.
Jay Lister.
Yes.
Cheryl File.
Yes.
Megan Litzer.
No.
Motion passes 4-1. Next, 13, new business. I will be looking to potentially approve a one-time CPI transfer to the general fund. They're looking for us to approve the direction Superintendent Clint Painter gave to Finance Director Morrison to do a one-time transfer of CPI administrative costs for the state-funded CPI projects to the general fund. This transfer is in an effort to preserve our fund balance to strategically respond to the financial impacts of COVID-19. They include for food service renovation of $17,812.63. Part general fund as part of the food service, the underground fuel storage tank at $7,097, LED lighting upgrade $2,224.19, high school middle school boiler replacement at $4,379.89, and middle school high school entry repairs and replacement $3,206.84. So this is a total amount of $34,720.55. I will make a motion to approve this one-time transfer of CPI administrative funds to the general fund. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Cheryl, and we'll go ahead and have a discussion now. Superintendent Container, or if Finance Director?
She's not.
Okay, so maybe Erica, you can elaborate,
sure.
Then if anybody has any questions or concerns, you can ask them.
Okay. So this is an effort, as we said in there, to preserve, you know, as much of the fund balance as possible. The administrative costs that come out for CIP plans do come from the general fund originally. That's where that portion comes from. So it's a reasonable replacement to put it to put those funds back into the general fund. So that's why we're recommending that. It's as you can see, it's not a huge amount of money, but it certainly is would help us with some additional staffing and curriculum work that we need to do. So that is it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, motion has been made and seconded. Mara, please call the roll.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Next, 13.2, resignation acceptance. The board recognizes the resignation of Phyllis Dreger. She was a newly hired middle school special ed teacher effective July 17th, 2020, prior to starting her contract, and Kessler Spurl Food Service aide effective July 1st, 2020. 13.3, summer school session number two, personnel hires. Summer school session number two aides, Gus Pennington, middle school, high school aide, Kelly Peterson, adaptive swim, Brittany Richardson, and Larissa McDonald, elementary aide. I'll make a motion to approve the hire of the classified staff for summer session school number two as listed. Is that a second?
A second.
Motion been made and seconded by Cheryl. Any discussion? They've, I think, all been working hard with our students that are attending.
It's been a great experiment this summer. It's been amazing. And I do want to recognize Ms. Kahn's work on all of the summer school logistical arrangements, and also Mrs. Woodstock. They both have done a lot of work with the scheduling. Of course, our fabulous teachers, Ms. Cabral and Ms. Midkiff, Ms. Eddy, Ms. Johnston. I'm leaving somebody out. Who did I leave out? Ms. Marifern. They've been amazing. Of course, it was great having Ms. Peterson back in the pool doing some adaptive swim. That was awesome. And she was happy to get back in there. We were happy to have her. So it's been a great crew.
Our household has appreciated them tremendously. Okay, motions been made and seconded for the hiring of the classified aides for the summer school session number two. Mara, please call the roll.
Meg Lipster?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Next, 13.4, which is in our administrative regulations set forth from the federal government covering leave by employees for a variety of reasons related to COVID. It is temporary unless extended by Congress and is currently set to expire December 31st, 2020. This leave is not covered directly by the Family Medical Leave Act. And just so people listening, as well as reminding our own selves, that an administrative regulation is not required board adoption. Our board policies require formal adoption, and then we ask ARs to be developed to carry out those board adoptions. So in this case, it would be AR 4161, 4261, and 4361. And I think, Erica, you have a little background information for people listening too.
Yeah, and mostly we did want to just bring this forward. As you say, it doesn't require action on your part, but you know, it's as with everything with COVID, we just keep getting different sorts of regulations and guidance about everything. So this is something that did come out. It implements the Federal Families First Coronavirus Response Act, and it was put into effect April 1st, 2020, and it does sunset December 31st, 2020. And it really just goes through just to kind of outline some rights that employees have, additional rights to sick leave and family leave under certain provisions related to this. So you can see what those are. Of course, there are things that we know people are going to be probably dealing with, whether it's quarantine or being sick and having to be isolated for some reason, or if they've been advised to be on a self-quarantine, they're having symptoms themselves, if they're caring for someone also exhibiting symptoms and maybe having to be in a self-quarantine because of that, caring for a child whose school or place of care is closed, So there has to be kind of, there's some specific guidance around that as well. Or if they're experiencing any other substantially similar condition as specified, there's a lot of things with Department of Labor involved in this as well. And then there's just some information around the way it works with pay, and there's some things around calculating sick leave rate of pay. It's not necessarily the same rate as their typical sick leave, but it is still, you know, so it helps, it's meant to help employees, but also to help provide a little bit of relief for the district as well, just because it, you know, we're going to be experiencing a lot of disruptions, and people are going to be doing these, you know, having to be out for a week or two, depending on exposure or something else going on. So we're working through the details. We're working through kind of a memo about all this to try to explain all this to staff, and everybody's, of course, we're all working together to make that as clear as possible to everyone. So just more information.
And this was written by AESB.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, our Association of Alaska School Boards, Mara let me know or reminded me that Association of Alaska School Boards helped write the AR so that we were meeting federal requirements. And I think if the public looks it up, it is specifically for employers, both public employers as well as private employers with fewer than 500 employees, but there's also that stopgap for small businesses with fewer than 50 employees aren't required to give it. So there are several employers here in town that would be required to offer this to their employees. But then of course you have the smaller businesses with fewer than 50 that aren't required to do it if it becomes a financial burden. Of course, that definition of financial burden is not, I don't think it's actually provided.
No.
But just something to keep in mind. So hospital employees, Forest Service employees, school district employees, who am I forgetting that have easily 50 employees, the borough, all have 50 or more employees, so they would be required to provide this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Does anybody else have any comments or questions? We're getting there, Cheryl. Okay, 13.5, universal free breakfast for enrolled students. Food service director Carly Johnson is McIntosh is requesting that the Petersburg School District provide free breakfast to all students regardless of their income. The district will cover any expenses not reimbursed by the USDA. Currently, the food service program has a positive balance that director McIntosh Johnson would like to use in this way. Students enrolled in our district by participating at home virtually will be offered the ability to pick up their breakfast at no cost to them. The entire high school student population currently qualifies for universal breakfast through the community eligibility program. So I'll make a motion to approve universal free breakfast to all students in the district for the 2021 school year using the food service balance to cover the cost not reimbursed by USDA for free and reduced students. Have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motions have been made and seconded by Katie. Any discussion?
I have questions. So this is Cheryl. This is our first time. Is this the first time we've had like a positive balance in our
food? Well, no, we've had a few years of that. Yeah, the amazing Carly. So we kind of started this conversation thinking, you know, she was like, well, I just want to do it for everyone. And I said, I want to do it for everyone too. And then we started really sitting and crunching the numbers and realizing that if we were going to have to do a lot of logistical things with staffing to try to make the breakfast work, that we might be able to just offset that cost by making those grab and go for everyone and making it simpler. And we crunched the numbers and it's going to work out. So we're very excited about it. It's a great thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions or comments?
This is Meg. Really easy question. For kids who are, if we're in a yellow or red, I think that will probably be like it was in the spring, but yellow for like an elementary student who is not coming to school until noon, or a middle high school student who is not coming to school at all, how do they get it?
You know, we talked about some ideas there, and Carly has some ideas about potentially kids taking their grab-and-go breakfast with them in the afternoon and having it for the next day. And then maybe the same thing on the every other day with middle and high school, that they may be able to take breakfast and lunch home with them, you know, the day before. So I think she's got some ideas. And of course, she has to work through her USDA guidance around that too. But everybody's working through these same logistics. So we've got a great contact up here in the Department of Ed, that Jo Dawson, she's amazing. And she is just a really strong advocate for making things, trying to make things simpler in the way that we can implement USDA guidance and make things really accessible, you know, to kids and families. So we're hopeful about that. We will be creative with that as well.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, motion's been made and seconded to approve the universal free breakfast to all students in the district for the 2021 school year using the food service balance to cover the cost not reimbursed by USDA for free and reduced students. Mara, please call the roll.
Sarah Holmgreen?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. 13.6, use of allergy anaphylactic care plan. Director of Food Service Johnson McIntosh is recommending the adoption of the allergy anaphylactic care plan form for students with allergies. The form will be provided to families during registration and forwarded to the food service director and the hospital. It aligns with our board policy 5141, healthcare and emergencies, and board policy 5141.2, administering medication. I'll make a motion to approve the use of the Petersburg Allergy Anaphylactic Care Plan form during the school registration process. I have a second.
Second.
Cheryl, motion is made and seconded by Cheryl. And we'll have a little discussion. I see that each board member hopefully has a copy of it. Oh, you got it up on the screen as well.
Yeah.
So it looks pretty straightforward.
And I do have information where Carly got this form. She did not create this herself. She got it at the School Health and Wellness Institute conference that she went to, and so she saw it presented there. And otherwise, she said that she really doesn't have official information regarding food allergies. And so when she's creating some of these grab-and-go lunches, she would like to know better what a child might be allergic to food-wise. So if this form does need to be filled out with a medical professional, it's not just filled out by a parent, but it will be filled out with a medical professional and then turned into her so that she knows actual, you know, what might happen in case there was any food allergy, especially for her. So that's why she is asking for the use of the form.
Yeah, you can see on the first page, if you can see it online, is looks like that's the one signed by the healthcare provider. And then the back side is to be completed by the parent. Do we know, could the healthcare provider be a nurse versus a medical doctor, especially if the child already has a diagnosed food allergy by a medical professional? I'm thinking my own son, who already has a diagnosis and has a prescription for a EpiPen.
You know, my guess is you might want to give this form to the doctor, and hopefully they wouldn't charge you for, I'm saying this publicly, for an appointment if they could fill out the form for you and just outline that part of it. Maybe that would be possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is Heidi Cabral. I'm just going to pop on real quick. Typically, for these types of paperwork, you just drop it off at the clinic or something, and they will get it to the proper person, and then you pick it back up maybe the next day. So it's a pretty simple process, typically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I just got a text from our food service director who said a nurse with a pre-existing if the child has a known pre-existing, the nurse can sign off on it. Yay. Thank you, Carly.
Yeah. So that'd be yours, right, Sarah?
Okay. So it sounds like it won't be too difficult, hopefully, for parents to, especially if they start, if we can get this up on the website fairly soon, if we approve it, and then parents can print it off or send a link to the medical, the clinic and ask for it to be completed, you know, if, yeah. Anyway, start working on it now. The school is really around the corner.
Yeah, I think we're trying to get, that's something we're working on for registration actually is trying to make these fillable PDFs if we can, and I'm working through that process too, so. Yeah. Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, motion has been made and seconded to approve the use of the Petersburg Allergy Anaphylactic Care Plan form during the school registration process. Mara, please call the roll.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Next, we have 13.7 free and reduced lunch application information. This is a reminder to the public that they can apply for free and reduced lunch via schoolcafe.com or by contacting our food service director, Carly Johnson McIntosh, and can find her information on the school district's website or call the district office and they can connect you as well. 13.8, the Alaska Association of School Boards Boardsmanship Academy. AASB will be offering the school board members the Fall Boardsmanship Academy virtually September 19th and 20th. And if any of the board members would like to attend, we want to let Mara know so we can sign up since I'm sure there is a fee to do that. Hopefully they'll offer something after the election, because I guess I'll move on to 14, which is additional comments from board members. You know, Katie, you're running for re-election. Meg, what are you doing? Are you going to sign up? Or are you leaving us?
I'm undecided. What's my deadline, Mara? Or Sarah?
Oh, gosh. It's got to... Do you remember?
August 25th sounds right. Yeah.
What's coming up? August 25th-ish? We can pull up probably the borough website and it'll tell us.
So really soon. That's okay. I can look it up. I do need to make a decision about that.
Get your signatures. Okay. Any upcoming dates and media announcements? You can visit the Petersburg School District website for academic and activity calendars, and please visit it often because I'm sure some of this information that we have talked about this evening will be put on there very soon. And check your emails. Be sure to check your emails because that is probably one of the easier communication avenues for our administrative staff to get information out to students and parents. Any future agenda items that we want to consider now? If not, you can always let me know, board members, and we can add it. If you can't think of anything at this late hour. Okay. Any other new business? If not, I will make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl. Mara, please call the roll.
Katie Holmland.
Yes.
Meg Lister.
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren.
Yes.
Cheryl File.
Yes.
Jay Lister.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Good work, everybody. Thank you, and good night.